This weekend, I spent quite a bit of time outside. It was actually so much fun to be able to, you know, it's not like I was held off by anything about, you know, getting outside previously. I did go places, I did go and do things and stuff like that, but this was the first time that I took some time to just go to a park and go to a woodland trail and spend time out by myself, just walking, experiencing, seeing, thinking, writing. It was wonderful. But then I also had to run some errands and I had to get some other things done. And there was a slap back into reality that came that I wasn't really expecting at all. So I guess that's what we'll talk about tonight. I'm Mario the Artisan Rogue. Thank you for listening. This is a podcast I do that just talks about my, you know, the things I sort of go through. So I guess basically my life in small snippets. Yeah, that sounds right. This one has to do with the whole thing. Like, as we all know, you know, if you're, especially if you're living here in the U.S., mask mandates are starting to go away. And I've very much focused the idea that I'm not going to focus on things like this because, you know, I know that everybody and their grandmother is talking about COVID and masks and all this other stuff. And I am a huge supporter in the idea of going and getting vaccinated. My second shot is going to be coming up here in just a few days. By the time actually you guys hear this, I might have already had it by then. So, and then, you know, I'm actually super comfortable wearing a mask. I don't know if I'd mentioned this before in a past episode or not. When I was still working at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art here in Kansas City, I started the day that they shut down. And then I guess they were shut down for about 3-4 months, something like that. My first day was when they shut down. The last day was the day right before everybody started coming back to work. During that time, I got really comfortable wearing a mask. And this was, you know, during the summer. And it doesn't even seem like it was that long ago. I mean, it's really been full cycle a whole year since I've been working there. And, I remember thinking to myself how much more comfortable I was. I have, for the most part, always been, I don't know if the term is an extroverted introvert or an introverted extrovert. I don't know which one really takes precedence in the two, because depending on where I am, I don't mind being around people or talking to people or interacting. But I also know that a lot of that is also not necessarily forced, but it's a circumstance where I feel like, okay, this is a circumstance that I need to be engaged with people. And I know what it's like, you know, having grown up pretty solitary in my own ways, what it's like to be, you know, a little bit ostracized or maybe left out of things. And much of that I put on myself because it's kind of what I preferred. But wearing a mask allowed me to be able to, you know, relinquish any real responsibilities of having to smile or anything else like that. You know, and I just liked being in my own world and just doing my own thing. That's all I really wanted out of it. But so then fast forward to just yesterday is what it was. I was, running errands. So I went to a couple of stores. I'm trying to remember which ones they were. It doesn't really matter. The point is that there were far less people wearing masks. And so, you know, one in particular, Target, had people still wearing their masks, which was great, but it was people on staff and not everyone. The vast majority of people, though, were not wearing masks that I had seen out in the parking lot, you know, walking in or anything. And there was like maybe one or two more whenever I got inside that were. I'm trying to play devil's advocate on this and just say, well, maybe they're vaccinated. They got their first shot or they're about to get vaccinated or they know somebody that got vaccinated. So they're like, I don't need a mask anymore. I guess. I don't know, man. It just, it was a fair bit of anxiety for me. And this is something I've been struggling with because, as it is now, and this is totally, totally open talk here. I've been struggling with, you know, things like hypertension and high blood pressure and all this other stuff. And it's really weird to me that during the time, well, I may have been, I don't know this for a fact, but during the time when I was working amongst people and I did get sick really badly, and according to the test results and the nurse and everything and the symptoms that I had, I did have COVID. And there's no such thing as necessarily a mild version of it, but my symptoms were not as bad as other people's. And I was very grateful for that. But three of my coworkers did not fare so well. One got it really, really bad and was completely confirmed that it was COVID. So it definitely was there in the guard unit that I was in there at the Nelson, which was freaking just a mess. I was off for probably about a week or so. And then, you know, cause they wanted to make sure I was completely symptom free and I was able to get back in there. But I do remember the freedom that I liked about the fact that, you know, I did have to wear a mask and it was a little bit more, you know, restrained in that aspect. I knew people that were able to work from, you know, home, people that have worked at Hallmark and other places. And, you know, I know that, one of the things that really fascinated me was that there has always been this age old thing, and I'm not the first person to be covering this part, but there's an age old thing where, you know, in American society, you have to be at your job. We celebrate the fact that you can, you know, place a phone call to anyone in the world and do FaceTime and do all these other things and practically see everything in real time with little to no buffer, if it's ideal, you know. And but it still seemed like people had to be in the workplace for the majority of the time, that you couldn't just work from home. And then it was really funny that during, or maybe ironic at that, that during the time that all of a sudden we have COVID, you know, necessity bred ingenuity, I guess, you know, because all of a sudden, I was working contractually and they just up and said, now you really don't have to come in here. We'll call you. And that's inevitably what ended up leading to me just walking away from the job because my hours went down. And that's fine. I'm much happier now with, you know, how life is right now. I'm still working freelance and doing other stuff. But the point was that I realized that that particular position, being a designer for Hallmark, didn't involve me having to be in an office anywhere. And it's really weird to see that businesses sometimes don't catch up with that sort of thing. Now, I get it. If you work intrinsically in things like maybe assembly, you know, like you're working on an assembly line or you're working on other stuff. No, you can't work from home. But if the majority of my work comes from the idea that it's all digital or there are servers that you can access to get your work and upload it and things like that, then why in the world am I having to consistently go in? Doesn't it make more sense that I can just get up and work on my stuff, be there for virtual meetings if I have to be, and move onward from there? I think that there was a lot of good things that came out of this because it led to people being able to probably renegotiate with themselves and try to figure out and understand whether or not what they were going through as far as a career path made sense. Now, that aside, it also throws it into a really sharp, you know, reflection whenever you're talking about just being out in public and people wanting to interact with you. The last couple of times, it seems like even though people were, you know, not wearing masks and I was wearing mine, people still seemed fairly eager to want to engage and interact and talk. And for the most part, I didn't mind it too much. But out of habit, I just got really used to not talking to anybody. And maybe that's a bad thing on me. I don't know. I know that, you know, the argument is that, and there's a lot of truth behind this. Humanity is a very social being. We are. I mean, if that weren't the case, I wouldn't be attempting to make a podcast right now for you guys to listen to. And even beyond that, you wouldn't have things like the explosion of, you know, social media in general, you know, for good or for bad. Let's just be honest there. Things like TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff, things that I talk about all the time, platforms that I'm on all the time, either uploading and or watching and reading through, that's us trying to be social from a distance. But it still gets me that whenever all of a sudden things are like, oh, we're going to open up theaters. We never really close down restaurants. But if, you know, if that sort of thing is happening, that people are almost willing to trip and fall just to get to this finish line, to get past what COVID means. I understand that us being, you know, vaccinated goes a long way. I am not completely convinced that we understand enough of it. And what I mean by we, I mean the general population on what that means to be vaccinated and what the long-term concept will be. Because only so many of us are getting vaccinated. Only so much of us care about it. Only so many really believe that it's doing anything. And so when you have that sort of wide gamut of people, I have to wonder to myself, like, is it just going to be something where this is going to drag on a lot longer? And we're going to see people that maybe I'm pretty well set in my ways that I will probably be the last idiot in Missouri wearing a mask well into November, December of this year. Whenever I'm around people, I just don't know. And honestly, you know, I remember having talked to a couple people that, you know, had worked and lived in Japan, and over there, that's not uncommon. If you're feeling sick that day, or you're, you know, you've got a cold or something like that, out of just complete kindness, you wear a mask. And that's socially acceptable. Over here, no, it's not. And I know that that was probably a lot of the reason why people freaked out about it at first and were suddenly so gung-ho, you know, to just like wear it around the ear as a chin diaper or something like that. I guess. I mean, for the most part, you know, American society has made us pretty vain. And I know, like, you know, I had one particular person I worked with, and she's like, this is not how you pick up people. You know, this is not how you, I don't look my best wearing a mask. I'm like, yeah, no shit. Nobody really does. I mean, you know, there's a whole factor that, like, you know, it emphasizes your eyes. And I've heard that before. Like, I think I'm right on that anyway, right? That, hold on, I'm going to take a drink. That, the eyes are like the most attractive part of a person's face, you know, so if you mask it up, that kind of heightens that factor. But I think that people in general just get really self-conscious about certain things. And if that weren't true, you wouldn't have people making fun of other people's fashion statements, never mind somebody wearing a mask. So, you know, when I was in there just walking around, seeing people kind of, you know, some wearing it, some not wearing it, I realized that I'm still very much one of those people that, and as terrible as this sounds, I actually really didn't mind the mask wearing at all. I think it was just comfortable for me. It gave me an opportunity to just not really have to interact with people. And I know that sounds really weird, because when I'm at a comic show, when I'm at any kind of social event, I have trained myself over the years, and I really mean this sincerely. I'll tell you guys a story here about that in a second. I really had trained myself to get better about interacting with people and being around people, just the whole nine yards. When I was in high school and all the years prior, I had difficulty making friends. I didn't really know how to speak, although I spoke a lot. My second grade teacher could definitely confirm this to many people. In a teacher-parent meeting, she told my parents, he knows a lot of gigantic words that he hears in movies. He quotes movies all the time. He's quoting Vincent Van Price. He's quoting all of these old actors and movies and things. And he doesn't know what 50% of the words mean, but he uses these gigantic, large, eloquent words. But he's also one of the most isolated kids in class. And that was part of a written note that she had sent to my parents that I was later shown many years later. And I'm still very much that way. There's a very small cadre of people that I feel very close to, that I open up to, on a completely, completely open level. And I don't think in my life at any given point in time, I have more than probably 10 people that I really feel that comfortable with. The rest of the people, there's a version of me that gets out there. It's probably not too dissimilar from the one you guys are listening to right now on podcast, where I'll talk about just about anything. But there's quite a few things that I figure people either don't care, or they just, you know, it's like, doesn't really matter. Just entertain me. Don't talk to me about your things. And so there's that. And it amplifies itself whenever this whole COVID thing started. I was like, well, now I can kind of be a little bit more of a recluse. You know, I don't have to be so chipper or, you know, necessarily open per se. And I'll use an example here that kind of rang true with me. I've been told by many people I've known that once they get to know me, I am not a scary individual. Now, I want everyone to understand, if you've ever seen pictures of me online or you know me in person, I am just, you know, your kind of average guy. I have a lot of long hair and, you know, just earrings, and I wear kind of biker metalhead sort of stuff. But, you know, I also don't necessarily fit into that specific stereotype as cleanly. I kind of do, kind of don't. And but the thing is that there's been a lot of times that, you know what, the drummer for the Roots, Questlove, he told the story once, and I think it was on, he was being interviewed by Colbert, and in it he talked about how when he got into an elevator one time with these two older white women, he had to smile a lot. He got in and was like, "Hey, ladies, how y'all doing?" and everything else like that. And just because he's a huge, imposing black man. And he was talking about how there's times in life whenever he's had to be overtly pleasant, over the top happy. And that's happened to me as well, too. I've had people that say, you know, that I look like I'm scowling or something. I didn't think that was the case. I've had people tell me that, you know, if they saw me and didn't know me, they'd cross the street. I am not a large or muscular or imposing person. I just, you know, like I said, I think there's aspects of me that radiate out, you know, I just don't want to be talked to or messed with or just whatever. Or people tend to fall into the fallible aspects of stereotypes quite a bit. But because of that, you know, going through life, dealing with that sort of stuff, this is going to sound weird, but COVID was kind of a relief for me. I mean, sure, I was scared shitless I was going to get COVID and, you know, die from it. And turns out I may very well have gotten it. And it was okay. I didn't feel great. I'm not going to lie. Those 7 days were hell. That was freaking terrible. And during all that time, you know, but I was worried. But ultimately, while I was wearing my mask and people were distancing, I felt more like myself. I felt like I had kind of been allowed to be okay, be moody or be just quiet, you know? And I always felt like, especially after I got out of high school, that I always had to make this exception to the rule and make sure that people were comfortable being around me. And that's an odd place to be in life, right? And again, you know, it isn't everyone, but it was just a certain, you know, a certain kind of person. And I'll give you a really perfect example of that. And rightfully so. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be wary of strangers. I get it, you know. I mean, stranger danger, right? 1970s, 1980s. But I'm still trying to understand why people want Ubers. I've only ridden in one Uber, and I was with a bunch of people I knew. And the entire time they put me in the front seat because I was the biggest person. And I was like, if I die, I'm taking y'all with me. I don't want to get stabbed by this Uber driver. That's literally what the 1970s did to me. So as I'm, you know, going through this whole thing where, you know, I'm remembering circumstances that, you know, people were uncomfortable with me. There was one, and it just happened in passing. And it's so sad because sometimes you get so used to it that you kind of turn a moment into a social experiment just to reaffirm that what you feel isn't an exaggerated component in your mind, that it's a real thing. And I remember whenever I was still working in Hallmark, I used to go out for a walk because working in a cubicle, working in a big building drove me nuts from the beginning. And, I went for a walk, and I was walking outside, and there's this little walkway area that goes down between, if you're in Kansas City or you're a former Hallmarker, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So there's one main garage connected to a lower level access point. Well, there's a sidewalk out there that goes down, and if you walk toward it, you're walking toward the Crown Center area. Well, I was the only person out there. I left the garage, and I decided, you know what, I don't feel like eating today. I'm going to take my lunch break just to take a nice walk through Crown Center and then come back to my desk. So I knew I had maybe about 20, 30 minutes total I could really walk. And as I started walking, there was one single solitary person walking back in my direction. It's another Hallmarker. I could see their badge because they were wearing it on a lanyard around their neck. I don't wear my badge on a lanyard. I didn't. I just had it in my pocket at that point because I was scared of dropping it outside. And I didn't realize that. I had totally forgotten about that. And by the time I was probably about 15 to 20 feet, you know, there's some traffic on that. There's a little two-way lane there. There was some traffic going by. And the woman, I guess, was so engrossed in either her phone or some, I don't know what it was, but she hadn't really looked up when she saw me. I could see in her eyes as I'm looking straight ahead. She kind of got like a little wide-eyed, like, oh, God, who's this person? You know, and I probably startled her just either she didn't see me, whatever the case was. But then I thought, you know what? My badge isn't out. My badge was clipped to the lower part of my shirt. So I just reached into my pocket, pulled it out, and it just dangled there. So you could see that it was me, that I had a Hallmark badge. The moment it came out of my pocket, complete total sunset of relief settled across her face. And then she was smiling, oh, hey, hi. And I thought, wow, so just because I had the Hallmark badge, it was fine. Which I understand that. Okay, great. You know, that sort of thing. I don't, even up to my last day at Hallmark, I never dressed like I was corporate. That was the last thing I did. And I remember just seeing that look on her face. And it kind of got to me, but I quickly smiled like, hey, how's it going? You know, and just walked on past her. And I thought to myself, I wonder how that would have gone if I hadn't pulled my badge out. And I'm fairly certain it would have gone like any other circumstance I've ever been through where people just got uncomfortable and wanted to move over to the side. Well, again, having gone through that a few times in my life, COVID kind of erased that. It made everybody take note of presence for the most part, whether they believed in wearing a mask or COVID or whatever, because of the constraints that were out there, because the majority of people were doing it. Even the hard-headed people sort of kind of fell into the whole stream of consciousness with that and decided, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and do this too and just stay separate, even if I bitch about it, even if I complain about it. So for that time, I felt a little bit more vindicated. I felt a bit more at ease and just myself, like I said. And I think that now that things are starting to go back to whatever normal was, I don't think we were even at normal back then, it's seeming to me more and more that I'm not really ready for this. I know that even the last couple of things that I did go to that were public things, like one was a little art festival at Powell Gardens and a couple of other places, like I was starting to ease back into that, right? But then the only time that I've really felt comfortable outside was actually when I went for a walk in Pearl Springs just yesterday. I walked for, you know, better part of an hour, and I really enjoyed it because it was just me by myself out there in the forest. And that was great. And that's the thing, is that I didn't feel any unease. I didn't have my mask on, of course. You know, I probably should have, because everything was blooming and my allergies were killing me by the time I got out of there. But I digress. The point is that I still felt really good about that, you know, and I realized how much more solitary I've become, even though, you know, sure, of course, I still want companionship and I miss a lot of my friends, and I'm looking forward to being able to see a lot of people again. That's fantastic. That's a wonderful thing. But at the exact same time, there's this whole reluctance, I think, that kind of grows up a little bit in me, you know, where I'm not totally sure that I'm ready to start completely being okay with interacting with people. But I have some people that I know that are just like, I can't wait until concerts back. I can't wait until all these other things. And I agree. There are some things that are pretty cool that I can't wait for either. But I think it's one of those things for myself that, no, in fact, I know it is, where I have never really taken anything in life at breakneck speed unless I'm forced to, which is probably one of the reasons why I never really worked out well in corporate. The moment that somebody is super demanding of me, that can completely turn me off. And that doesn't mean that I can't do freelance work. It doesn't mean that I can't do work like that. I can get it done. And in circumstances with freelance, I have a little bit more, you know, viability and flexibility in that. But when it came to being on site and working on things, that drove me a little nuts because, you know, I know things have to be done, but I promise you, nothing bad would happen if you took a little bit longer to work on things or took a little bit of time to explain and understand things. And all of that came full circle again with the whole thing of like, man, I don't miss any parts of those interactions. I don't. I just don't. I remember one time, and I could use this as a good example. I was really struggling to understand how to transfer some files in this one particular moment there. And it was the way the files had to be transferred. And I remember this breakneck speed that one of my managers instructed me on how to do it. I don't process information that way. At least not that kind of information. First, I didn't give a shit. That's probably number one, my fault. But I'm just telling you guys the truth. I didn't give enough of a shit about it to really process it like I should have. Probably because the person explaining it didn't really care. They simply wanted it done. And I can understand that. Sometimes I believe that, you know, and although I say I understand that, I'm not saying I agree with it. Sometimes managers can get so in the zone, that they're like, I know this. This is how you do it. Just move forward with it. I made that horrible mistake one time, too, talking about social interaction. When I was working at the Kansas City Chiefs Stadium, I worked for Aramark for a while, and I was one of their managers, and I got into an extreme shouting match with a guy who, and it was just as much my fault as it was his. He kept not wanting to count things, and I'll never forget. This is actually, this could be a whole other episode of this thing, but, you know, this is one where a bunch of us are having to work. It was preseason, you know, so, like, we're all working to try and get things together and do stuff, and I'm like, we have to take, you know, stock of everything we have. Every cup needs to be counted. This is what they want. I'm not a fan of it. We could make them into stacks, and then you can quickly eyeball from there. And I had tried to work with these people to make it a circumstance where they wouldn't be counting up every cup. But I'm like, look, if you make a stack of 50, all you have to do is make sure the next stack of cups is identical in height. That's all you have to do. And just this sleeve is 50. Do you see what it is? And that sort of thing. And I tried my best to use, you know, probably the most remedial way of trying to do the job. Not because I felt that the people that worked for me were stupid. I never, ever assume that. You can't. Because you don't really know people's backgrounds, especially if they're contractual workers that you bring into a circumstance on a seasonal basis. And I was new to the job as well, too. So I was simply trying to take what I knew of how I did things and try and apply it the simplest way possible. Well, there was one guy that we kind of hit it off okay, but, you know, just, I always knew there was something a little bit off, but I couldn't tell, and I assumed it was me. You know, I really did. I was like, okay, this is on me. I'm probably not trying hard enough. Well, one day, he just kept screwing around. He wouldn't stay in the back and count things. And finally, we had it out, and I was like, you know, because he said, you know, no, dog, I'm not all about that. I'm not. You know, this, I can do better than this. I'm like, okay, that's great, but I need you to do this. Like, everybody else is doing these other things. All he wanted to do was take certain things with him on this, on some of the, pallet jacks and run them up to the different restaurants and stuff that are in the stadium. But I really needed him to stay down there because he was one of the others that also would just go off and do something else and just take extra long time up there on the clock. And we had deadlines to hit. We had things we had to get done. So in this circumstance, I'm just trying to keep him and another fellow counting. I come back, I left for a little bit. I went to the bathroom, came back, he's gone. The one dude's there, and I was like, what happened? He goes, I don't know, man. He just wandered off. I'm like, oh, my God. Well, I found him over in the liquor cage. Now, he wasn't doing anything wrong, but he's just hanging out in there. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, oh, man, yeah, I just wanted to come in here and see what we had, and kind of trying to joke. I was like, dude, come on. Look, man, please don't make my job hard. I'm trying to make your job really easy. It's not that hard. And he was like, yo, dude, dog, you know, I'm not going to do it. All right. I'm not going to do it. And I was like, what is your problem? It's just counting. And there was something about me saying it was just counting. And he lost it. He was like just cussing up a storm, not necessarily me, but just the job. I didn't need this stuff. And then that's when I found out, because I guess when people get really mad, I can certainly back this up. He started telling me, he's like, you know, I don't even need this job. I'm getting $400 a month from the state, man. I'm a ward of the state. I'm like, all right, but well, then why are you here? You know, like, I will gladly let you go if you need to go, but we need somebody contractually that can work with this. You know, just get a hold of your union head. We can talk about this, because that was the other problem, too, was unions. I had to be careful what I said, and because, you know, it was just a really weird circumstance. But there was also, you know, my background that I'd had in security and in other places where I never really had to work with union people. And in that circumstance, it came to a head. And before I knew it, we're yelling at each other. And finally, one of the other people that worked that was union came up to me and said, he can't count. He can't do basic math. And I was completely beside myself. You know, I didn't know. I assumed, I sort of surmised that was the case. And but it was a social failing on my part. Now, is there fault on his? Probably so, but I didn't really focus on that. There's nothing I can really do about that. That's for that individual. My own failing was I didn't really work hard enough to try and figure out what was going on there, and I just made assumptions, and I just kind of rolled right over him. I almost said rollerbladed. I don't know why I did. And so then, after all that happened, I remember just screaming and just getting pissed, and I had to walk it off. I mean, I was furious, and like, I was really disappointed in myself. I was like, God, that was unprofessional. And a buddy of mine who was working with me, we gotten to know each other really well. I learned a lot from him. He's a great, great co-manager. He walked with me up to the top of the, where the stadium area was. And I don't even remember. It was up at the top of the ramp from when you get up from the warehouse area. And I'm just like furious. And, his name's Pete. Wonderful dude. And Pete really kind of calmed my ass down. Like, I mean, he just talked to me and everything else like that. And you know, you'll meet those people in life that, like, when you meet them, you're like, God, I hope I know this person for the rest of my life, because they fucking got me really quickly, you know. He was a wonderful diffuser. And when that happened, I managed to calm down. Then a couple of other guys came up to see if I was okay, and some other people. And then, of all the things, some other dude, and I can't remember his name right now off the top of my head, he had just gotten hired there. And I used to know him from when I was a bouncer. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember you. Somehow he was there working as well in the warehouse in a different area. And I thought, holy crap, man. So there was then it became a whole thing. And it was like, oh, God, Mario got mad. And everyone, but I was always really even keeled prior to that. And people couldn't believe I got upset or what was going on. They were sure it was all this guy's fault. I'm like, no. A lot of it was my own fault, too. I didn't ask questions, and I assumed, and I probably should have been listening or taking some social cues, but I just didn't. And then, long story short, just to let you guys know on this part, we did end up making amends. He was the one that came to me. I remember I was chopping salad one day, you know, just chop. For some reason, like, nobody liked making food prep there, and I had to do like certain things, and I did food prep. I had my little mask on my beard and all this other stuff. Like, this is pre-COVID, so the, you know, the kind that holds your hair in. And I'm just chopping away, and he comes up and he was like, "Hey, man, I just want to talk to you, man. Just kind of clear the air." Because before that, for the 3 to 4 weeks after that, he didn't talk to me. I didn't talk to him. I didn't give a damn. I was like, I'm not going to talk to him. I got nothing to do with it. You know, and that was probably terrible of me, but I was like, I don't think we can make any communication. I said some things I shouldn't have said, and he certainly said things he shouldn't have said. And, they were cool with it, you know, but he finally had to come up to me one day, and I wasn't mean to him. He said, "Hey, man, you know, I just wanted to let you know, man, I'm sorry, but I don't know how to do math, and I got some problems and everything else like that." And we sat down. I was like, "You know what? When we have lunch today, just you and me, let's just go talk for a bit, man. All right. I'll get permission. We'll talk, but I'm also going to clear this with the head of your union, just to make sure everything is good," which was weird, right? It's like asking somebody's parents, you know, can I talk to this person? It's just really weird. And, but you know, following all that sort of stuff, we talked and we hashed it out really quickly there. And then at lunch, you know, time, we did talk for a little bit. And I said, "Dude, like, there's no shame there, man. Like, you know, I failed algebra like 4 times. That was the most embarrassing stuff in the world for me to go back multiple times to do algebra. And just that long ass walk of shame right back to that same class 4 times in a row in the same school was horrifying. And, I always think of that one character from the movie Better Off Dead, who's like, you know, I've been in high school now for 7 years. I'm no dummy. And I always think of that for some reason that always comes back to me. And especially in that circumstance. Well, with this, I told him, I was like, "You know what, dude, there's plenty of circumstances. There's no shame in that. You know, I've worked with people that didn't read at certain levels and had problems with math. I still have problems with math and things like that, but open communication is everything." And he went on to explain to me that culturally it wasn't a big deal because, you know, I mean, and as it was, this was what was really horrifying. He was 21, just 21, but he was a ward of the state because, he had some mental health issues and some things like that. And he had been abandoned by his parents. So he was growing up with his grandmother. But he had a girlfriend who just the week prior, he had found out she was pregnant. So he had a kid on the way, but he was good with this because he still made $400 a month. And I didn't have the heart to really go into detail, like what rent would cost, what any of this thing would be. And it was just, it reminded me. And so this is a very long-winded story about communication, but it reminded me about how, you know, so much can be lost in translation, even when you're trying to interact with people without a mask on, you know, but because it wasn't maybe a physical mask, but it was certainly social standing, cultural age, all those masks were worn. And those barriers, those walls, are hard to redefine. They're hard to reinvent. And I think that as we start to see more and more people not wearing masks and life eventually returning back to whatever semblance of normalcy it was once at, we can never really go back, right? That we'll start to see more of that, where people are going to be maybe a little bit more impatient or fearful that we will go back to this, you know, that we'll regress once again. Because it's really what ended up happening for most people. When they suddenly couldn't go out and get dinner, when they suddenly couldn't go and see family members, when a sickness was there, many people were much more comfortable living in denial over the fact of it even being there, being a thing. And that's pretty damn horrifying, right? Like, you know, but at the same time, people like me, and I'd like to think that there's quite a few more people that that are like me in this respect, that were a little more comfortable and happy that social distancing did exist. I wonder what that's going to be like for them. Because I know for me, there's more than a little bit of fear. There's like a little bit of worry and wonder. That being said, like I said, I cannot emphasize enough that there are plenty of people in my life that I'm excited to see and hang out with again. That is a real thing. That's very much there. But it doesn't mean that I'm going at it with complete, you know, blind faith or random abandon. That doesn't mean any of that isn't, you know, still that's still there. There's nothing I can do to get rid of that. And I think that's okay, you know, because you do anything for a long time. I mean, what is it? They say it takes like what? Oh, I think what, like 30 days to develop a bad habit that sticks with you, but it takes like 6 months to get rid of that same bad habit. That is a similar thing. I got used to the idea that, you know, I saw people virtually or just messaged them or talked to them or maybe just interacted with them on, you know, my social media or through platforms like this, you know, where it's kind of a one-way circumstance. And now that isn't going to be the case anymore. And I'm really worried that maybe I'll be a bit of a failure in this. You know, I say that, but you know, I also like to pride myself in the fact that whenever I do meet up with people and friends and family again and stuff, I usually fall right back into the same cycle I had before, and comfortably so, even if time goes by, you know, because I've always felt that, one thing that American society is sometimes lacking in is that we like to tout that that we're a very social construct, and to a certain degree, I believe we are, but it's a lot of one way sort of, a lot of one-way process, you know, a lot of you listen to me, I don't really have to listen to you. And I've seen it played out many times in corporate America. I've seen it played out in social settings, from bars to family gatherings to just random interactions at shows. But thankfully, I've seen plenty of people that do want to listen and do want to hear. And that's what I'm really hoping. To end all of this, I'm really hoping that maybe there'll be a renaissance of people that want to listen and want to hear. I know that on social media, that's something that I really started doing recently. Like when I saw that there were people, there was one particular artist here not that long ago that he had a rough time through losing a sponsor. And I had messaged him because he followed me, I followed him. And I was able to, you know, direct message him, and I was like, hey, are you doing okay? And he said, yeah, I'll be fine. Thanks for checking on me. But I responded back, which he didn't respond to this, but I said, you know, I know that everybody needs an ear from time to time. I was like, you know, I've got two, you know, that old cheesy, corny thing. And I said, if you've got anything that you need to talk about, I totally understand, man. You know, but for what it's worth, your work is amazing. And I think you're doing really good work. And, you know, that sort of thing. So I hope you're doing well. And that's it. And that's all it really needs to be. But sometimes I worry that those are the aspects and examples that will go away. I really tried when the pandemic hit to make sure that I wasn't losing touch with people. But I know that everybody handled it differently. Some people isolated more out of depression. I know I did to some degree. I know that some people rallied and were overcompensating, you know, and I make that sound negative, but I was kind of in that same camp where they were trying to reach out to people and message people and talk to people and just, you know, keep that open window aspect there. But at the exact same time, understand that I am still fairly introverted. And there's plenty of times when I'm like, nope, don't want to do that. I don't want to talk to nobody. I'm going to go sit under my desk or something. It's that sort of thing. So Oh, man, I don't know. So, man, I managed to ramble on for 30 minutes on this. No, 40. I'm going on 40 minutes on this. Holy crap. So hopefully you guys found something in there. You know what? Here's a question for you guys. What part of it, now that things are starting to open up, do you feel that we should be focused on? You know, do you feel like there should be something of just running kind of forward and just focused on what we would like to believe is a return to normalcy? Or do you feel that there should be some change in there and intrinsically as an end result, be something more where people are willing to listen more, learn more, and be open-minded? Because I really don't believe that they're connected that much. I don't think you can rush forward and be willing to listen. And I don't think at the same time, if you're listening, that you're rushing to do anything, because that means you're taking time. But they both have to happen to a certain degree. Because I can understand where we don't want the economy to keep falling and everything else like that. Now, that goes into a whole other spectrum of pay rate differential and like the minimum wage, a discussion that I'm not going to get into right now. I probably will never get onto on here unless somebody asks. Hint, hint. So anyway, as that goes, thank you for listening very much. Again, almost said watching, and I'm not recording a YouTube video. That's tomorrow night. Thank you for listening, and you can find me on social media everywhere. Just look up The Artisan Rogue. You can find me on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Etsy, and on here on Podbean. I know I've had some people ask me, why didn't I submit this? But I was like, you know what? I don't know that people would even care about the first two seasons of this show because it was so weird. It was just off. It was not very well done. And I'm grateful for the people that have hung out and kept listening to this over the time. And I'm really surprised by the listens and everything consistently. I'm like, wow, I guess people kind of like what I have to say from time to time. And they're willing to listen to me ramble for 40 plus minutes at times. So that's nice. I dig that. So I am Mario the Artisan Rogue. Thank you for listening. And I will catch you in the next podcast.